Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galati. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, how are we doing this week?
Wonderful. Jim, there's no such thing as tampering in college football, nor is there any such thing as an off season now.
Correct on both parts. You know, we're going to hit into that tampering thing a little bit, but just as a preview, you got to think of it as if college football players, every single one of them is a free agent. And that's
all the time.
Yes, in
a great irony right now, the way we have college and professional football set up is that the way I think a lot of fans wish the NFL works is how college works and vice versa.
Yeah. Do you know, and this is me digressing into a baseball story because all of our listeners know I'm a big baseball guy. Years ago in Major League Baseball, when free agency was just about to happen, Charlie Finley, do you remember that name?
Sure.
The owner of the Oakland A's, very controversial. He said, we should just make them all free agents every year. And the rest of the owners were aghast by that. No way in the world could we do that. That would be chaos. Well, his point, and he was totally right, is you get into these bidding wars, you start giving these guys 10, 12-year contracts, which are crazy. Owners now, I think, wish they had the scenario with the every-year free agents like they do in college.
Well, I'm sure Ryan Day would tell them to be careful what you wish for.
That's true. That's true. All right. Hey, let's get to it. I wanted on the top of my agenda, I wanted to talk defensive coordinators with you.
Yeah, but for sure.
Before we get looking forward, I did want to talk to you about Tom Allen because we had a great question last week in our Ask Andy segment. One of our regulars, Jimmy from Forest City, he presented this question. I had Andy answer it, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Here was his question. Mm-hmm. Give me the statement that is the most true. The most true of these three statements. Tom Allen wanted out of Penn State. Penn State wanted Tom Allen out of Penn State. Or Dabo Swinney wanted Tom Allen in Clemson.
I think, Jim, that the most true is that Dabo wanted Tom Allen. And as I think about the order you read those to me in, I think they are true in reverse order. When Tom Allen said, I didn't call Clemson because I wasn't looking, I think that was true. And absent the opportunity for Tom to kind of amicably part with Penn State, I don't think there was a Kirk Shiraka style 1 year separation in the offing for Penn State. I think both sides were not entirely comfortable with one another. Not in a way that there was any kind of deep dislike or certainly like hatred or anything like that. Maybe it doesn't even rise to the level of discomfort. But, you know, sometimes like you're in a job where you're doing the job and people ask you what you think of it and you say it's fine. Or, hey, how's that new guy you hired? How's he working out? No, he's fine. And I think that was it. I think both sides, it was fine. And so when Dabo called with $2 million on the table and the added benefit of Tom Allen's wife doesn't want to be in central Pennsylvania and does want to be close to her grandkids and they happen to be there. And, you know, Tom is a man of faith and Dabo very publicly is that. I think that was it. So that's my answer to the question. Great question, by the way.
It was. I liked how he framed it. I also like how our colleague Andy Shea answered it. He said, I don't think they slammed the door on Tom Allen on his way out. But I do think they gave him a hug and held the door open.
We're seeing what Penn State, Pat Kraft, James Franklin, what they're willing to do and what they're willing to spend to shore up the defensive coordinator position. And there was very clearly no effort to retain Tom Allen. When Tom Allen came in and said, hey, I got an offer from Clemson, James Franklin basically said, great, go with God.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, sir.
And patted him on the back, congratulated him. And I think the way you put it, when you made it more, hey, you often in our own businesses, you see this, or in our business careers, you see it all the time where that employee says, hey, I've been getting some offers. Hey, congratulations. Good for you. I'm sure you're going to be happy with XYZ company. It's that same way. You're not kicking them out the door, but you're not shedding any tears if they move on.
At Penn State, and I think this is correct, they clearly believe they have a distinct advantage having Chuck Losey in charge of the strength and conditioning program. And so a couple of years ago, when he was going to be given an opportunity to move on and make more money than he was getting at Penn State, they were very quick to back up the Brinks truck in order to keep him in Happy Valley. So yeah, there's no question. When they feel like there's a unique asset in-house and there's a threat to lose that asset in a lateral move, they're aggressive in trying to retain the coach. And that did not happen here.
Now, Chris, as we were talking about the situation with Tom Allen and the different scenarios of moving on, changing jobs, retention, is this a guy you want to keep because he's got some unique skills and talents? We could have that entire conversation, all of those comments. Now let's move forward. And the big name in the defensive coordinator search is Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, very highly thought of. Now, here's also the preemptive comment from me. This stuff has a tendency to just work out so quickly. It could drag on forever and then boom, it's over and done. By the time folks listen to this, they might have the final answer that you and I don't have right now.
Yeah.
But let's start with the fact that Jim Knowles has not made a decision yet. He's currently the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, and by all reports has multiple opportunities. There's Oklahoma, where apparently he has a fiance who's from Oklahoma. Okay. I can't recall the last time I heard an assistant coach in college football with a fiance being a factor in their decision of where to go. He's originally from Pennsylvania, so he has some Pennsylvania roots. You have Penn State, as you said, if they've got the funds now, they are apparently putting in a pretty good bid for Jim Knowles. I've set all that up to say, Chris, your thoughts on Jim Knowles. Is he worth some of these numbers that they're throwing out there?
Well, just to address that question in the abstract, Jim, one thing I really try not to do too much is, you know, quote the salaries these guys make as a way of criticizing them. You know, that's a popular criticism of James Franklin. It's like, oh, you're getting paid $8.5 million, you're getting paid $10 million. Is he worth that? The market says that he is. Willing seller, willing buyer, Jim. So right out of the gate, like, is he worth $3 million? I don't know. The answer is both no and yes, depending on how you want to look at it. And to me, ultimately, what is important is, does the guy, is he the candidate that Penn State wanted? And does he plus up your coaching staff if he joins it? And the answer in both cases is yes. And at that point, the market just dictates what he's worth. And that's north of $3 million because he holds all of the leverage as the biggest name on the market and probably one of the few who can accomplish the golden dual benefit of actually improving your results on the field through his coaching acumen and energizing the lifeblood of every elite tier football program, which is the confidence that your donors and boosters have that you're all in to go win it and you can actually do so. So yeah, it's, you take those two things in concert, the number of big programs that have openings, and then that would include Ohio State, because he's, if he leaves, then they have an opening. So they're in play to try to retain him, and the other options on the market. Yeah, you got it. Once you get in, man, you got to be in it to win it. And that means spend what you got to spend.
What does it tell you that it's dragged out for this long?
That is, he's got a good agent who understands leverage and understands the market for his services. And I also suspect he probably has to really sort through. I mean, think about it. He's almost 60 years old. I don't think he aspires to be a head coach. It's very possible he considers the job he takes now to be the last job he'll hold in college football. Although, Jim, we certainly know that somebody who says they're going to stick around for four or five more years at age 60 isn't necessarily done with the sport at Penn State, right? But, look, you're at Ohio State. You just want a ring. There's Penn State, and we know all the advantages and drawbacks of being here. Same thing with Oklahoma. I'm sure the guy's taking some time to work through all of it. It's a big decision. But also, like, if you're his agent, you see big dollar signs because you can pit three of the biggest programs in the sport with virtually unlimited resources all against each other in a bidding war.
And that appears to be what he's doing. I have the concern with it dragging out. Now, again, we talked about Tom Allen earlier in the segment where Penn State was not heartbroken, is our feeling, with Tom Allen moving on. So you didn't have the prospect of a counter. But you had Tom Allen seem to be, look, there's Clemson, very good fit for me. Our feelings on life and the spiritual world coincide with Dabo's. I have family in that area, and they're willing to pay me a good amount of money. He didn't turn it into a bidding war. He felt that was the place he wanted to be. My concern, Chris, is when you have a situation where, yes, these guys have the right to go for the most money. We all do in our work world. Go to the best job, paying the most. But when it gets dragged out like this, my concern is it becomes, yes, like the agent looking for the most money, and that becomes the only aspect to it. Chris, I'm going to let you respond to that when we come back for quarter number two. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about Penn State's search for a new defensive coordinator. As we said earlier, Chris, our listeners may know a whole lot more than us by the time they listen to our show. But as we record,
so we're trying to skirt around. Everything we're saying right now is true, no matter what has happened by the time you're hearing this. We got him. We didn't get him. We don't know anything. All of this stuff applies in terms of just analyzing the dynamics of the situation.
It is true. And I'm looking at it. You mentioned earlier about, hey, Penn State's playing with the big boys. They're willing to spend the money. And these are things that we weren't always sure about with Penn State. Here are the couple red flags for me, though. It does feel like this is Jim Knowles getting his final contract. It's almost like his my concern becomes, Chris, is you're being paid for what you did previously as opposed to what you're going to be doing going forward. I often use the baseball analogy. You know, and I'll bring up someone like Albert Pujols, who had a brilliant career in St. Louis. They were highly criticized for letting him go to the Angels for the biggest contract. And what happened? I think the Angels, they regret that. Maybe a little closer to home, I look at the Jimbo Fisher hire by Texas A&M. Hey, he's a national championship-winning coach. We need to bring him here. Well, A&M got the chance to spend a lot of money, but it was, you know, that last contract for Jimbo. It was more about that, I think, for Jimbo than it was the opportunity to win. At age, I'm hardly one to talk about age 59 being old, Chris. To me, he's a pup. He's a youngster. But in coaching careers, that's pretty late in his career. Those are the red flags I see. Is there anything to what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, when you talk about getting paid for what you've done versus what you're going to do, I understand that. And then you just go back. Let's extend your Pujols analogy. Really, I mean, look, all of these baseball franchises are businesses. Some of them, because of the personality and the deep pockets of the ownership, do treat them more like, you know, somewhat of a civic obligation as well as a personal project where you want to try to win for winning's sake. And then there are, you know, then there's like the Pirates who just treat it like, okay, if I spend $10, I got to make $20. From the Angels' perspective, you know, they just need to look at it and say, well, is the contract I gave Albert Pujols, whether we won or not, was that offset by, you know, whatever, you know, sponsorship deals and ticket sales and concessions and all that? Was my investment worth it? From Penn State's perspective at this point, like, yeah, look, Jim Knowles, from what I understand, if you add up all the incentives and everything, was already in the $3 million territory at Ohio State, because that's the waters that program swims in and we aspire to swim in. So it's not like, you know, we're paying twice his market value or something, but let's just say it's a little bit less. Tom Allen got $2 million. So let's say Jim Knowles, you add a championship ring, he's what, like $2.5 million, let's say. If you're bidding in the territory of $3, $3.5, even $4 million, you can take all the things which we can discuss about his acumen as a coach. I talk about his ability to improve results on the field, and he has a track record of being able to do that. But to me now, this is as much about communicating to your fans, your alumni, and most importantly, the big dollar folks who are going to make this whole thing go, that you are all the way in. And so talking about ROI, if you got to pay the guy an extra $1 million, is that going to energize a couple of deep-pocketed folks who could return that amount of money 10, 20, 30 times over to your program over the next 8 months in terms of commitment to the Beaver Stadium renovation project, NIL, donations to the athletic department and others of their friends who they can get gassed up and say, hey, you know, I'm in for this. What are you in for? Because you spent an extra $1 million on your defensive coordinator position. Like, yeah, absolutely. Do what you need to do. It's like I said, once you get into this, you need to understand that the boats have been burnt. Like, you are in it to win it. So you spend what you got to spend. And listen, Pat Kraft's not a dumb guy. He understood the number of viable candidates who are on the market and the fact that there were going to be other defensive coordinator openings. I mean, everybody understood, for example, that Al Golden was very likely going to head back to the NFL after the college season. So I'm sure he understood, hey, if we get into this Jim Knowles sweepstakes, there's no flirting around with it. We've either got to be willing to go all the way in, or we can't even, you know, we can't let it get out that we're into the bidding. So the fact that this thing has gone this far down the tracks, I think this is, again, it's a positive sign. If you're the type of fan who wants Penn State to be in it to win at all costs, literally.
So in a way, you're looking at this as not just an investment on what Jim Knowles could possibly do for you on the field, but what he represents.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if it does that, I get that. Now, as a fan, I'm all in on the team, whether, you know, extra money is spent or not. What I want are, you know, the smartest decisions being made for the team on the field. And I don't know I've not been aware enough of Jim Knowles and watching carefully what his Buckeyes do. What I do know is what this was. He's had 3 years with Ohio State, correct?
Yes.
And two things that strike me is they got better, which is a good thing to the coach on defense. But it was like 3 years to get to that point. And it was also, boy, that's a very, very talented Ohio State defense.
Yep.
You could throw the ball on the field and just let them go play, and they probably would have done pretty well with all that talent. So can we look at this as a hire that will say, boy, there's going to be a tangible difference with this team that's all in this season? Because I think if you're a Penn State fan or part of the coaching staff, the administration, whoever, you've got to be looking at, what gives us the best chance to win it all this season? Because that's where they're at. That's the window right now. I'm not sure 26, I don't think, is going to look like the same opportunity that 25 does.
Yeah, I think you can look at it from two angles, Jim. The first of which being that Penn State, thankfully, usually has a really good defense. And so you look at since Manny Diaz left and prior, frankly, but coming in, I think you and I talked about it when we were discussing the new coordinator hires. Tom Allen's main job was, hey, son, here's the keys to the Ferrari. Don't crash it. Well, once again, that's the mission this year. Like, here's the keys to the Ferrari. Don't crash it. And if you can bring in a Formula One driver, you feel a lot better about trusting him with the keys than, you know, your 16-year-old who just got his license for the first time. And so a lot of this is just like, well, can Jim Knowles transform this defense? Like, I don't know, maybe, probably not. It doesn't need to be transformed. He just needs to not wreck the Ferrari. And he might, you know, he might be able to drift around a few turns that most drivers in America could not. So, yeah, there's that. Also, in terms of the point you made, well, you know, how hard is it to win with Ohio State's talent? Well, number one, like, super hard. I just, this whole idea of like, oh, well, look at the talent that he had. Whenever I hear that criticism of a coach, I say, show me the guy who won at the highest level without talent, because you will be hard pressed to answer my challenge. But I can give you a laundry list of guys who had a ton of NFL caliber talent on their rosters and didn't win. It's hard. It's hard to manage talent. It's harder to manage personalities. And it's difficult to make the right calls in the right situations. But another guy who is in the mix for the defensive coordinator position is Bryant Haynes, the DC at Indiana, there for only a year. And kind of the same thing. I said, look at that guy. I'm more interested in what he did at his previous stop at James Madison than what he did at Indiana. I'll say the same thing about Jim Knowles. What's most intriguing and impressive to me, and why I liked him a few years ago when he was being thrown around as a possible candidate for Penn State, and, you know, Ohio State gave him the big money. He was at Oklahoma State for 4 years. They don't play defense in the Big 12, and they don't get the caliber of athlete that either Penn State or Ohio State gets. And he improved the results year over year, all 4 years he was there. And by the time he had his chance to really get his hands in there and mold the clay, Oklahoma State of, you know, like Mike Gundy, Big 12, throw the ball around the yard fame, was playing serious big boy defense. And you actually had a reclamation project there. I don't even know if reclamation, a building project. Reclamation implies that they ever played defense before they got there. And so I think the guy actually has chops. I mean, I think he's got the brain and he's got the teaching ability. And so now, having done that at a big time FBS program, then gone up a level and also shown, hey, I can build, but I can also inherit and not take any steps back and tinker around the edges and make minor improvements that gets you to a ring, I think that makes him the total package. And that's why these schools are, you know, beating each other's brains in to offer the man millions of dollars to be their defensive coach.
And I'm playing a bit of devil's advocate here. So the other part to it is when you talked about when Tom Allen came in, you said, hey, here's the keys to the Ferrari. Don't wreck it. Is also from looking at it from a different way. It's about continuity. Can you, and if you say, look, everything's in place, the players, the structure, the culture, all those things. And if you're thinking, hey, I just want this to continue, does that not point to, say, Anthony Poindexter, who's the internal candidate? And what does it say that Penn State didn't go to him right away?
Well, we can get into that a little bit more, and I'm happy to talk about it. But again, to me, the answer is pretty simple. You were going into the highest pressure season in decades for Penn State football, and for sure the highest pressure season for James Franklin since he's gotten here. And the risk of entrusting your defense in a year like that to a first-time play caller is immense.
So if you get the thinking is get the best guy that is possible out there, we're ready to spend the money, we're ready to be with the big boys, we'll compete with the Ohio States and the Oklahomas, and we'll bring in the biggest fish. That big fish would be Jim Knowles. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number two in our defensive coordinator conversation. Next up, I want to talk about next year. Let's get to it when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. First two segments, we talked about the defensive coordinator position. It'll be intriguing to see where they end up there. But you finished out segment number two, Chris, talking about this next season being the one where there's the most pressure probably ever in James Franklin's career. I believe that to be the case also. And the idea I brought up of, you know, the internal candidate for defensive coordinator, Anthony Poindexter, you pointed out, don't you want, when you're in that kind of position, the absolute most experienced type of person to do that job, which would be a Jim Knowles type. And the reason why you talked about this being the most pressure, this is a Penn State team that has so many of their players returning, Chris, and we've seen now multiple places that way too early 2025 ranking where Penn State has actually been ranked number one. Your take
on
that?
Yeah, I mean, we have all these subjective – yeah, we have these subjective conversations about, you know, most pressure and how much scrutiny, most in his career. To me, you can quantify it. It's going to be the highest preseason ranking for any Penn State football team in the James Franklin era.
Yeah, that is it. I don't think it's open to debate about the amount of pressure on them. And it's interesting to me, too, that this past season – they had both the success of getting to the Final Four, getting to the semifinals, winning those couple playoff games, but his critics still get to say, you haven't won a big game. You haven't won a big game yet, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and it was a wonderful season, and I think we will look back on it very fondly. I also think that's a valid criticism.
Well, I do too, Chris. And, you know, it's I think more than one thing can be true. Mm-hmm. And I think that they won a lot of games. They did things where James Franklin, they came from behind late in games. They had to come back against Wisconsin, come back against USC. They had to do those kind of things, yet they have yet to win that big name brand game. Yeah, whenever I say that, never, I don't mean never. Hey, 2016, we all love the fact that they beat Ohio State that year. But since then, Chris, where is their big game win?
Yeah, I look, we've changed presidents three times since that time, Jim. I mean, we're talking about a long time ago now at this point. And just to the point, let me restate one of my little pet peeves from this past season. Just I think about this a lot, and it speaks to just the absurd nature of the sport that we love so much. USC to me was one of the most confusing teams all season long. And I mean, it does not reflect well on Lincoln Riley. I think there is no question that their performance was way below what you ought to reasonably expect given the talent on their roster. And I think about the fact that given the results across the country, the week before Penn State went out to the Coliseum to play the Trojans, had they stopped Max Brosmer on that quarterback sneak on fourth down when they were playing out at Minnesota, they would have been ranked in the top 10. Instead, because especially earlier in the year, we base so much on preseason rankings and what we think we know about teams, they go from being 11th that week and would have been in the top 10 given some upsets that happened, to everyone like, oh my God, you lost to Minnesota. Minnesota's terrible. Like, we're going to drop you out of the rankings completely. They dropped 15 spots for losing a game on the final play of the last possession to a team that turned out to be not great, but pretty good. And then that robs James Franklin of being able to say that he got a big win over just the extreme levels of subjectivity that dictate all of this. So, I was joking about this with Kevin, my co-host. I said, you know, I guess you could probably argue that if USC would have had a single digit number next to their name, James would have found a way to lose that game. But it's the same team. It's the same team either way. In some ways, perhaps they're more desperate having lost to Minnesota because they realize that if they lose to Penn State, their season is functionally over. So I think it's a valid criticism when the people who say James didn't win a big game this past season, I think that's right. We do not want to become a program that measures itself by wins over SMU and Boise State. On the other hand, there are wins that are meaningful and we ought not just toss them in the trash can because we're so upset that we lost to Ohio State and Notre Dame.
And also, Chris, I think that this past season, we spent a lot of time talking about, oh, we went from the 4-team playoff to the 12-team playoff. There's NIL, there's transfer portal, there's team switching conferences. But there was something else that went on this past year, which I think was different. And there aren't those, like in prior years, where there's the three elite teams. There's Georgia, there's Ohio State, there's Alabama, and then there's the rest. And for those couple teams, those two or three teams at the very top, they can't lose a game to someone other than against each other. To demonstrate my point is, if we had had a 4-team playoff this year, okay, three of the four teams in that 4-team playoff would have had two losses. In the prior 10 years, Chris, of doing this with a 4-team playoff, there were no two-loss teams that ever made the 4-team playoff. My point being that the standard this year was very different. It wasn't about going undefeated or just have one loss to an Alabama or a Georgia. It was avoiding losses to other teams that you shouldn't lose to.
Yeah.
And Oregon was the only team that got out of it unscathed. Penn State, and I don't know if there's another team, maybe Georgia, whose only losses were to the very top teams. Penn State lost to Ohio State and Oregon. I guess Indiana actually qualified, believe it or not. Their only losses were Ohio State and Notre Dame, the two finalists. But if you look around at the losses that teams like Alabama had and LSU had, and even Ohio State did against Michigan, I'm going a very long way here, Chris, to say Penn State did an exceptional job by not losing a game that they shouldn't have lost when there were very few teams in the country who could say that.
And that was a pain point for James Franklin through the early years of his tenure at Penn State. It was like a hallmark, frankly, of losing those games. And he hasn't done it in 3 years. And that's growth and improvement. And I'm, as a fan, I'm very grateful for it. It's been good for my mental health.
Okay. So there has been improvement. I think the fact that he's not losing those games to Minnesota or Michigan State or to Pitt, he's crossed that hurdle.
And to your point, at a time when there's more parity in the sport than we've probably ever seen.
Yes. And he made it to a Final Four. He's done that. Now, the next question is, Chris, are these preseason number one rankings, are they warranted with the players coming back?
I mean, sure. To the point about there not being one powerhouse team or even a handful of them, I think you can take probably the top five, maybe even six predicted preseason teams and just sort of shuffle them around. And for sure, there may be one or two others that end up rising to the top of the pile. We don't even know what's going to happen over the course of the spring and the next transfer portal window. But I mean, I don't really want to be the preseason number one. I would rather be one of the sharks circling the inner circle of the bullseye than being directly in the middle of it. But if people want to vote Penn State number one preseason, I'm not going to argue with that. I think there's a lot to be said for it. It's just my preference as a fan is I'd like to be down a little bit further. If I had an AP ballot, Jim, I would not put Penn State number one, but I would seriously consider ranking them in the top three.
I would too. And I think you can make the argument there because of obviously the players returning. Here's something interesting. And I'm using the ESPN ranking preseason, their 2025 way too early ranking. There's about 100 of them out there.
Sure.
And first of all, their top four, Ohio State, Texas, they had Penn State third and Notre Dame fourth.
Mm-hmm.
What do those four teams represent, Chris? The four finalists. The
four teams that made the Final Four?
Yes. So then the next two teams are Georgia and Oregon. Who are they? They are the two biggest conferences winners from this past year.
Yep.
But so those are the teams 1 through 6. Round up the usual suspects, right? What is the one thing that differentiates Penn State from those other five of the top six teams?
By the way, I can never not mention this when it comes up. That phrase, which has entered into the cultural parlance because it was a line of dialogue from Casablanca,
yes.
You have Penn State alumni to thank for that. So the screenwriters of Casablanca are alums. So I always
are
like to
really?
Point that out. Whenever anybody drops a phrase from Casablanca, I'm like, you know what? We use that. Most people don't even know where it came from. Thank a Penn Stater.
Well, just real quick on Casablanca, which I think is the greatest movie ever made.
Wonderful.
But definitively, it has the most memorable quotes, plural, of any movie ever made.
No doubt. No doubt. I am shocked. Shocked. Another great one. Okay, so you were asking me what differentiates Penn State from the other teams in that top six.
Yes.
I'm sure the answer might be obvious, and I've distracted my brain by thinking about Casablanca. I mean, we've got the best uniforms.
Well, that goes without saying. Now, here's the thing. We're approaching the end of the segment. Do you want the break in between the segment to try to gather your thoughts and answer it, or do you want me to give you the answer?
I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to say go ahead and just give me the answer. We'll talk about it on the other side.
Their starting quarterback is returning.
Wow. That is a great point.
How much does that mean? That question I'm going to let you think about during the break, and we'll start our next segment with that because, well, I'm not going to give my thoughts either until we come back after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
So welcome back to the fourth quarter of the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking college football, Penn State specifically. And Chris, after I just muddled up the intro, let's get to the question that we had at the end of quarter number three, which was top six ranked teams. It's, again, to quote Casablanca, round up the usual suspects. Top four teams, I'm using ESPN's rankings because that was handy. They had the four teams in the final four of this past season, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, and Notre Dame. Then fifth and sixth, they had Georgia and Oregon, who each were seeded number one and two in the college football playoff rankings because they won their conference championships, the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten. And I asked the question, what separates Penn State from the other five of the top six teams? And I said it was they had their starting quarterback returning. My next question is, Chris, how important is that?
Well, I am inclined to say extremely important, Jim, despite the fact that the two teams that played for the national championship this year had quarterbacks in their first year with their respective programs who they'd brought in through the transfer portal. I just think, again, the football, I always talk about how the sample sizes are so small, so you have to let things play out over a long period of time before you can feel like you've really reliably identified trends. I don't worry too much about all four of the teams that had byes in the first round of the first year of the 12-team playoffs not making it to the title game or not advancing, because who knows? We'll see how that plays out over a few years. I do think if we're trying to identify trends and we're trying to look around the country and see where do you get benefit, for sure right now we're seeing in the NFL that league is benefiting from rookie quarterbacks coming in, having had more reps in college because they're more polished and seasoned and ready to play. In college, we can say it's great to have these multi-year starters because they've been given the opportunity to have multiple off seasons to do work, multiple seasons to see and experience things, and those things can build on each other and compound. So even though, you know, it's been shown with Dylan Gabriel and Will Howard and Riley Leonard and Cam Ward, frankly, even though they didn't quite get where they wanted to in Miami this past season, they're going to try to use that approach again with Carson Beck. You can go to the transfer portal. You can bring in a seasoned product. Now, all of those guys were very experienced, right? So that's the other thing. You can say, yeah, they were at new programs, but they had played a lot of college football. I think the continuity and the stability for Drew Aller, and let's not undersell the fact that he's in the same system with the same offensive coordinator for a second year. I think that's big. I think it's very big.
I do too, Chris. And I actually wrote down in my notes as I was asking you the question about a returning quarterback. Maybe it's not so much a returning quarterback as it is experienced quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the two guys from a year ago that I used as the example were Bo Nix and Michael Penix.
Yep.
Going to Oregon and Washington, and how successful those two teams were.
And to the point, both of those guys had great rookie seasons in the NFL.
Exactly. Having had more reps in their college careers. Now, I also think you could, that exact statement you made about the NFL, just translate it to college. And the question then becomes, you mentioned this past year, Ohio State with Will Howard, they brought in a, you know, that experienced guy, Riley Leonard, to Notre Dame. Are those teams now going to have that kind of opportunity to bring someone in from the transfer portal that has that kind of experience?
Yeah, I think some will and some won't. To me, one of the most interesting questions, because I feel like Ohio State, I think, has to be pretty comfortable going into the year with Julian Sain as their starting quarterback. Because again, like once you win a ring, you get X number of years, even from the most demanding fan bases like they have there in Columbus, you get a little bit of a grace period where I think they feel like if there are some growing pains with a younger quarterback, there will be a tolerance level for that, especially because we now see you've got margin for error like you never had before in college football, because you can lose that Michigan game and still win the national championship, right? I am much more interested to see what Oregon does, because there is a lot of pressure out there too, simply because a big source of the what James Franklin called tremendous resources they have out there is one guy, and not to put too fine a point on it, but Phil Knight's on a ticking clock, and that guy actually wants to be upright and ambulatory to see this national championship he's trying to buy. And so the question is, how much faith do they have in Dante Moore as a first-year starter, or do they go out based on who's available this spring and try to drop coin on a starter? I think, you know, maybe if you're Dante Moore, you feel good about the fact that Quinn Ewers decided to go to the NFL, because, you know, otherwise I thought he was probably one of the quarterbacks who Oregon would pursue aggressively. So just like the defensive coordinator search, Jim, it's part of it is who are the candidates who are available. Most of those teams you mentioned have a starter who they've brought in. Either they acquired through the transfer portal, like Dante Moore, even though he's a young guy. He was a redshirt freshman for them this past year. Or, you know, they got Arch Manning at Texas, somebody like that. It's all about, do you see somebody who you believe could come in and make the immediate impact that Will Howard and Riley Leonard did? I don't know that there are going to be as many of those quarterbacks available this year. So I think you're going to see more of the top contending teams maybe just roll with the in-house guy, which I like, by the way. I don't love the fact that there's always like some quarterback being promised a chance to come compete for a starting job, and then every single year, it's like, well, you know what? Our free agent guy worked out pretty well, so we're just going to bring in another free agent starter. I kind of like the old school days of bringing in players and then developing them in-house.
Well, help me out if you remember, Chris, the guys that we're talking about, like Will Howard and Riley Leonard, last year, which portal window were they in? The right after the season, or did they become available after spring? Because I don't think there was a lot of talent that came out after spring.
No, I am pretty sure both of those guys were like right after the season window.
So, again, I guess the question for this year is, who are this year's Will Howards and Riley Leonards and Cam Wards? Or do they exist? Now, like you said, Carson Beck already went to Miami. I think that's one of them. Are there any more that have either already made the move or are a prospect, a potential move after spring?
Boy, off the top of my head, Jim, I'm going to say that I am not thinking of anybody who can have the impact that those guys did on their programs. And it was obvious when Will Howard and Riley Leonard went to their respective schools that they were stepping into ready-made situations, and those were win-now moves by both of those programs. I'm not thinking of one off the top of my head. I do want to throw out just I think it's going to be an interesting storyline to follow this season. Is UNLV seeing what Boise State did, I think, is all in on trying to capture that group of five playoff spot, because they went and they got Alex Orji from Michigan. And they also just signed Kevon Lee, the former Penn State running back, who I really liked. I liked his running style, and I'll be watching UNLV. I'll be rooting for them. This is not a title contending team, but I think they're looking at this and saying, hey, this is our chance to go to the playoffs. So, that you just asked me about quarterback movement in the offseason and haven't seen Kevon just committed to UNLV. It looks like in the pond in which they swim, they're pushing their chips to the middle of the table.
What year is this for Kevon Lee?
Oh, boy. Well, he was, he was taking snaps for Penn State in the COVID year. So it's been a while. These guys, those COVID babies, man, they play forever.
Well, and then, hey, the opportunities in college now, could get paid for it. It has changed the game, which leads me to something I alluded to at the very top of this show, Chris, the idea that these players are absolute complete free agents. And I saw something where somebody brought up Jeremiah Smith, maybe the most talented player in college football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Literally, he's a free agent.
Correct.
Why not? And the suggestion was he should declare his free agency. Even if he has every intention to go back to Ohio State, why not go out and set his market value? We talked about Jim Knowles, and the thinking is that Oklahoma, Penn State, hey, they're setting his market value to over $3 million. And Jim Knowles is just saying, hey, going to set my market value. Even if I want to come back to Ohio State, they're going to have to pay that price.
Yeah.
Nobody's critical of him for doing that. He's not being disloyal. He's just doing what's right for him in a business sense. If you're Jeremiah Smith, why in the world aren't you doing the same thing?
I'm with you. Look, I am firmly, Jim, in the category of don't hate the player, hate the game. There are no rules. There is no tampering. There is no loyalty. There is no hand on the tiller. Okay. This ship is just completely adrift in stormy waters right now. And everyone inside the system is, just making decisions for themselves on their own best interests. So yeah, if you're Jeremiah Smith and you got 2 years before the NFL wants any part of you, at which point you might be the number one overall pick in the draft. Absolutely. But make your money, young man.
And you know what? Considering the fact that you brought up there's no such thing as tampering, maybe he hasn't officially entered the portal, but maybe he sort of kind of has set his market right.
Yeah, who can't? We should just get rid of the transfer portal. It's just a sham, like this whole thing going on with Wisconsin. It's just every time anybody talks to me about rules or market value or enforcement or anything, I just laugh in their face. That's all gone. It's off the table until somebody comes around and puts structure around the thing. And right now we don't have it. And if the guy's on the market and Penn State's spending big money, get the guy's agent on the phone and give him $5 million.
All right. Hey, I say take that money you were going to give Knowles, give it to Jeremiah Smith.
For both.
All right. That's the final word. Thank you, Chris. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.